It's that time on the radio in this 2020 where we listen to Bill Blevins and Blevins Franks. How are we doing today, Bill?
Hi, I'm very well indeed, thank you. I hope you're well too.
Yeah, can't complain at all. Now let's look at savers and UK interest rates, looking back at last year and this. And I guess, Bill, many people expect to be able to use their bank savings to receive an income or perhaps save the interest for the future. So can we review last year for savers and also look ahead to this year? Okay?
Sure. I mean, I think in the past it was, if you like, perceived wisdom that you accumulated your wealth throughout life, and you at the point of retirement would then put a fairly substantial amount of your funds, if not all of it, into a bank or a building society, and the interest that it would pay would help support you in your retirement. Now, is that still the case? Well, frankly, no, it isn't really, not with interest rates down at these low levels. And, you know, during 2019, people who were depositors have witnessed more than 500 rate cuts across the range of building societies and bank deposits, even though the Bank of England base rate hasn't actually changed. On average, banks and building societies reduce the amount of interest on two savings deals every working day, giving 521 interest rate reductions across the spectrum of banks and building societies during 2019. It means there are no easy access accounts, those from which savers can withdraw their money without any timely notice. There are none of them that match inflation. And so as a consequence, anyone who thought that putting money in the bank and that would interest would support their income in retirement, even if they're in the best of the accounts, they are physically losing spending every week that goes by because the rates payable by the building societies are significantly lower than the levels at which inflation is eating into the individual's capital.
Yeah. So with this era, Bill, of low interest rates, how does it affect borrowers and savers?
I think, well, the Bank of England have indicated that the average rate of return for an easy access account, one which you can access without too much notice, is less than half of 1%. And that is down a fraction from the numbers that they produced back in April 2019. About 240 accounts had an increase in rates, according to the financial data provider MoneyFacts. But many of those happened at the start of the year and were, in fact, if you like, a delayed reaction to the Bank of England rise in base rates, which took place in August of 2018, from 0.5% base rate rising it to its present 0.75%. Many of those rates which went up at the early part of the year were reduced later in the year as interest rates tended to peg downwards. MoneyFacts again have said that 2019 has been an horrific year for savers, especially for those who rely on the interest to supplement their income. Part of the Co-op Bank, the Britannia, they cut its rate on one-year fixed rate ISAs by almost 1%, down to 0.75%. I could go on, but Howard, the import of this is that there is a massive pressure on interest rates downwards, and that means that if you do have money on deposit, you do have money in a bank or a building society. In 2019 it was pretty dreadful, and it doesn't really look for a whole host of good quality economic reasons like it's going to get a whole lot better into 2020. I think 2020 could be another year where people rely on bank or building society deposits as part of their overall strategy for investment in retirement. They're likely to find at the end of the year the spending power of their capital will have reduced by 2 or 3%, despite the fact that they'll be earning a modest amount of interest on their money.
Yeah, interesting. So, Bill, what factors does the Bank of England consider when deciding whether to cut or raise its base rate?
I think it considers a whole raft of matters that influence the bank. I mean, when they're setting interest rates, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England has a government-imposed target to which it agreed to keep inflation as close to 2% as possible, and if possible, less than 2%. The decisions that the bank make, they're informed by an inflation forecast, because if you build into your calculations these factors which influence inflation, you get a pretty good idea of what you might need to do to interest rates to make sure that you keep inflation at under that magic 2% number. They'll be looking at the current rate of inflation as reported through the RPI. They'll be looking at the returns on wages growth so that they can see if there's more money coming into the economy, therefore a likelihood of greater spending, which in some circumstances can lead to increased inflation. And they'll be looking at the cost of goods, mostly those which are imported, and the impact on those goods as far as the exchange rate with the delivering country is connected. Consumer spending will have some influence on it. The levels at which people are actually spending money contributes to inflation. They'll be taking that into account. And the levels of investment coming into the UK and how that might pan out into the economic environment of the business community. And interest rate decisions, they also consider unemployment rates and the kind of estimates that the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England are able to make on the likely growth which the economy is likely to make by its own internal calculations. I mean, the Bank of England has said that overall, they don't know that if lower interest rates are applied, what the impact will be, other than it tends to increase spending. And if we raise rates, that tends to reduce spending. So to meet our inflation target, they need to judge how many people intend to save and how many people intend to spend given the current interest rate scenario. Interest rate adjustments are made in a very determined and precise fashion by these economists and the people who sit on the Monetary Policy Committee. But remember, and I've said this, I think, in our conversations before, Howard, changes in interest rates intended to perhaps stem inflation, when they're made, when there is perhaps an increase in interest rates to try and slow down the rate at which inflation is growing or reduce interest rates to go the other way. The simple fact is those changes don't actually come into place for several months after the interest rate change has been announced, because the mentality of the consumer, the mentality of employment is such that they're always an overhang. You know, you make a decision on interest rates now, and the impact on that decision actually arrives in the economy 5 or 6 months after that decision has been taken.
Yeah. So what about Brexit then, Bill? Does that influence the Monetary Policy Committee?
I think it has done. I don't think you can get past a discussion these days in terms of UK economics without bringing Brexit into the equation. We don't really know exactly what the Monetary Policy Committee thinks overall about Brexit. They tend not to make public statements. They rather wait and see what the approach to Brexit has been and what it's likely to become. And that means that you might not see any base rate changes until after the UK has departed the European Union. Mark Carney, the outgoing this year governor of the Bank of England, and since the referendum, he's been adamant that interest rates could go up or down after Brexit, depending on the circumstances that then apply. He summed it up, it's not automatic which way monetary policy would go in the event of a hard Brexit. And you know, we're not clear that we aren't going to get some form of a hard Brexit. And at January's Economic World Forum, he said the Treasury Policy Committee that a no-deal Brexit could likely lead to bank rate being cut. So it's rather undecided. I mean, much will depend upon how the 31st of January, when it's passed, how the next session of negotiations pan out, and how tough or otherwise those negotiations are, and the impact of those tough negotiations are bound to be tough on the UK economy. So we shall have to wait and see, I'm afraid, as to what actually happens with interest rates after the 31st of January and throughout next year as those negotiations continue to take place.
Yes, so Bill, it's a time of uncertainty still, isn't it?
Oh, it is, absolutely. Yeah. I think the simple fact is we have, you know, massive changes going on within the UK. You have an overwhelming Tory majority in Parliament. It sounds rather like that's going to make decision making a little easier. But, you know, things change, as we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, when push comes to shove. We don't yet know the exact stance of the European Union in relation to a free trade agreement. It sounds rather challenging to get all of that done by the end of 2020, when Prime Minister Johnson has said that one way or the other, we are leaving the UK. We're not going to extend the Brexit discussions and the relationship with you beyond 2020. So there's that. And then, of course, you've also got these incredibly difficult geopolitical events, terrorism still on the rise. And of course, you know, America's recent action against Iran is likely to lead to consequences which could have a dampening effect on the world economy by virtue of the reaction to all of that.
You say it's dampening on the world economy. Do you think it's dampening on interest rate movements as well this year in the UK?
Yeah, I do. I don't think interest rate movements are going to go upwards at all in the coming year. I think the difficulty of determining quite where the economy is going to go, certainly in the UK and indeed in Europe and to some extent in America, although both of those economies had a great 2019 through the markets. The simple fact is that uncertainty doesn't, generally speaking, lead to interest rate rises. Uncertainty leads to a doubting population, a doubting in the minds of those people who set these numbers. And I think interest rates are likely to remain at least static, but more likely, in my opinion, to go down a peg or two.
Yeah. Looking at it from a personal level now, Bill, if we can, what factors do people need to consider when deciding which savings account to use or if they should look elsewhere for better returns?
I think it's difficult. Look, it's pretty clear. There isn't one single sterling-based, UK-based savings account with a bank or a building society that is paying a greater level of interest than the rate of inflation impacting them on the capital you invest. Now, obviously, it's very sensible to keep some of your capital in cash. Who knows when you might need to access cash at short notice? There's no good having everything invested in shares or stocks or bonds and the like. They go up and down. You don't want to be needing the cash when they're at a down level. You need to have a reserve of cash. But, you know, frankly, having an excess of cash on deposit is simply to throw good money after bad. You know, if you have worked all of your life to accrue that capital, you need to be looking for alternatives. Now, you know, in the investment markets, looking at government bonds, looking at corporate bonds, looking at, frankly, a number of AAA-rated cash funds paying more than banks and building societies, but without any greater risk, generally speaking. And certainly as far as fixed interest bonds are concerned, government bonds and corporate bonds, whilst there's a degree of risk with corporate bonds, the yields are very good, still up at the 6 or 7% level, generally speaking. Government bonds paying down around bank and building society rates, but often with an opportunity for capital returns as well. Those are safe havens for people who are looking for alternatives to cash deposits. And it's in that sphere, for example, when Blevins Franks are giving advice about a portfolio, that we will be considering the stability of your cash and the way in which we can make that cash outperform the prevailing rate of inflation.
So, Bill, what's your advice to people who are a bit fed up waiting for bank rates to improve, but they're also wary about taking on too much investment risk?
Yeah, I understand that. It's not a difficult conundrum. I mean, if you think about it, anyone who has watched the volatility of equity markets over the last 20 or 30 years at times, you go back 10 or 11 years to the collapse in the world economy and the way that markets fell by 20, 30%, even more in some smaller market cases, it does create a sense of fear, if you like, that if you're going to go to equity markets or something similar to equity markets, you risk losing your money. However, you know, maybe we should talk about this at another time, Howard, but the markets over the last 10 years should have proved to everybody looking in as an outside and impartial observer that being out of those markets for the last 10 years has been a hell of a lot more expensive than being in them, because the performance of all of the world markets, pretty much Portugal, perhaps not so good, but most of the world markets have done very well over the last 10 years, whereas cash deposits have done nothing other than be eroded by the impact of inflation. So what I would suggest, if you're looking for stability, is to talk to Blevins Franks about how you could establish a holding of your capital, whether that is in cash or in other forms of investment, to make sure that you have sufficient liquidity in cash to meet any urgent or immediate demands and to give you peace of mind, if you like, but also to make sure that you do not need in cash is earning its keep. And by earning its keep, I mean invested in real assets, starting off with low risk investments and moving up through the spectrum to the equity markets, to the point at which, you know, they have produced phenomenal results over the last 12 months, and anyone who is out of those markets must be regretting it, because to continue to stay out of those markets in 2020 could bring about a similar result. Very little, if any, return on cash, and yet quite incredibly good results coming out of the equity markets.
Yeah. So, Bill, I guess for our listeners in Spain, the best way to get in touch with you is your website.
Yeah, I think if you go to www.blevinsfranks.com, you'll find a whole host of information there about the nature of the business. And you'll find there will be an office not too far from you. If you contact that office and arrange to make a meeting, that meeting will be without obligation and certainly in confidence and without cost. But it will at least give you an opportunity of discussing with fully regulated, independent and impartial advisors quite how they think at Blevins Franks you might best position your cash to get the best out of that cash without having to stay awake at night because you are concerned about undue risk. It's what we've been doing for nearly 40 years in Spain. I think the beginning of a new year, or just about the beginning of a new year, is a good time perhaps to review how you hold your cash and talk to somebody about how you might take a different approach and actually benefit yourself by outperforming inflation and making your capital grow.
Well, thank you, Bill. We'll continue this conversation next week at the same time. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Take care.
Well done.